Hey, it's Jonathan again from the future, letting you know that we have a Patreon. So go see it right now because after this episode, you're going to have a lot of questions about the man in the iron mask. And that is our second episode of Patreon. So please go find us at patreon.com/swordboys and join today.
This is weird that we have a guest for our the year anniversary of Sword Boys.
Yeah, this episode is dropping March 19th. Our first episode, our first Highlander episode dropped on March 7th,
Nice.
2023. So we are officially a full-blooded podcast. We should probably start that Patreon at some point.
Yeah.
It's time. It is
Just
time.
it seems
one
fitting to.
year of swords is better than a lifetime of love.
I love that. I love that. What's
Sentimental.
going to happen is when this recording comes out, none of that's going to be audible because
Oh,
Zoom doesn't like singing as a thing.
so I was doing a parody of One Year of Love by saying One Year of Swords. Sorry.
Robin hasn't found the setting where Zoom will stop cutting off your voice at certain points.
It
Yeah.
gets rid of background noise. I have some here.
You
Yeah.
can talk, Travis, you can talk if you want to.
If I want.
Okay.
Yeah,
Now, see, the trouble
I
was
know.
last time Travis tried to talk, Robin cut him off. And this time, when Travis tried to talk, I cut him off.
Well, what do you have to say, Travis? It better be funny because it's going to be right before the music
Yeah.
plays.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Congratulate us on 1 year, please.
Well, yeah, well done, boys. And I am a little rusty, literally. So please forgive me.
Great job. Roll it.
Here we are.
Welcome to Sword Boys. We're 1 year old. Look at our baby boy. Today's a very special Sword Boys in that we have an extra guest because the Three Musketeers, which always has four people, that's a weird point that every movie has four people in it. That's odd. But I am one of them. I am the first Musketeer, Jonathan.
I'm another Robin.
I guess, the third musketeer, if we're keeping count. I'm Rick.
And I'm the guest.
The last musketeer.
Yeah.
You said there was an extra guest. Who's the other guest?
We always leave room for Jesus.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
And Chris O'Donnell's hog.
Oh,
There's a
yeah.
setting for Elijah. Don't forget about him. We were all hanging out, going about our day, and then one by one, Travis bumped into us and was very rude. And we told him where to
Very
meet
rude.
us, and it just happened to all be in the same
Rick,
place.
you cannot podcast with him, for I am podcasting with him in an hour.
I'll be done
Oh,
with you
wait.
shortly.
So, for all you out there, it's our friend Travis Bowe from many podcasts like the Real Comic Heroes podcast, the Robin Hood. Wait, what's the name of the Robin Hood podcast?
Minute of Thieves.
Yes,
Minute
Minute
of
of Thieves. Yes, yes,
Thieves.
yes. Minute of Thieves.
Yes. You might remember Travis from our crossover episode where we were talking about Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves as part of the Road to Sherwood series
That's
leading
right.
up to Minute of Thieves.
Yeah.
So we've moved up in time. Now we're in the 1600s. We're in the mid 1600s. So Travis can enjoy that time in France.
Yeah,
So
I mean,
I think the biggest question is, Travis, what's your history with this movie? And like, tell us about it.
I don't know if I saw this in theater, but this was a definite rental, VHS rental, often in my house growing up. And this really scratched that Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves itch. I'm guessing you guys have talked about how much this movie kind of feels in that same vein.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for
It
sure.
I'm glad you noticed it too.
shares a lot of the same DNA. I didn't realize until watching the first cut that Michael Kamen did the music for this as well. And then obviously you've got Michael Wincott, as playing the same character basically.
Yeah, let's slap an eye patch on him. That's different enough.
Right, yeah. And yeah, this was one that I watched I think quite a bit And then it kind of, it never really, it didn't live up to the Robin Hood Prince of Thieves in my heart, but it was one I really liked. And obviously they were going for the same sort of thing with, you know, it's got a song at the end, and they really wanted that to be, you know,
Bryan Adams, even.
Right. But I like that they went about it, you know, with the, having three, you know, artists kind of do the song this time around. So that was fun, but it never really quite hit that high. But then it also, like, neither did Robin Hood Prince of Thieves, really, you know. So I think it did the same amount, same, almost reached the same height, but and then just kind of seems forgotten to time almost. But
I mean, what a great way to commemorate a song about the French and the French people by having two English people and an American. What a great way to do this song. There's no French.
It's Canadian.
Canadian, I believe. Yeah,
sorry.
Well, maybe it's French
American,
Canadian.
North American. Yeah. French Canadian, probably.
Can I ask? So, yes, we are the Three Musketeers, and our guests are always D'Artagnans during this run. So can I ask our D'Artagnan here, Travis, who would you assign Athos, Porthos, and Aramis energy to, each of us? It doesn't necessarily need to be the actors. It could just be the characters. But if you want to bring in, like...
No, that's easy. Know, I've got it.
Okay, you got it ready. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Rick is Porthos. Robin, you are Aramis. Jonathan, you are Athos.
Okay.
Couldn't
that
be more
completely
wrong.
Completely different from
completely different. Not even one did you get right. Not even the same.
Okay.
That's okay.
No, well,
we checked it against the answers, and you got a zero.
I didn't know this was going to be a running gag when we did
it
the first episode. So
we'll see who hits it.
I'd like to see who.
I say I'm Porthos, but see, this is different. Having someone else tell you what you are as opposed to what we think we are is like that's its old Rorschach kind of thing.
I will say you all have big Porthos energy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Huge liars.
Why are we? Why are we who you say we are? Is there a reason?
It's just a vibe. I can't, you know, that's just surface. That's just top of the dome. You know, as soon as he asked that question, I was like, yeah, no, I know which one of you is which. And that felt
is it because I'm an angry drunk that I get to play Kiefer Sutherland?
The question of ourselves. And the very first thing that Jonathan said was, Robin, you're Athos because you're divorced. So, you know, there's different qualifier for Musketeers.
Is Porthos because he's the most charismatic and vivacious.
Right. There's definitely an argument. I could reorder you guys. I could see Robin, you are Aramis.
Mm. Still Aramis.
And did I say Aramis for the first time? I did, didn't I? Well, there
that's
you go.
Okay.
I'm just really Charlie Sheen radiating from me. That's
that tiger blood.
I could switch Rick and Jonathan.
It's okay. All right. There's no wrong answers, except we did grade you and you did get
a
zero.
You did say I was wrong. Yeah.
There are no wrong answers, but you're wrong.
Right. So. Yeah. How many cuts are this movie? That doesn't seem right, but how many
episodes? Cuts am this movie?
Yes. Thank you.
We cut it into six.
Six. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. It is the magic number that we found.
That'll Should've be fun three. To see how you're. All your guests rank you.
Yeah. It's Three Musketeers twice. And also, we don't know if we're ever going to have guests on again. We don't know.
You should. This is the one movie that requires, I think, a guest.
I think so.
A fourth Musketeer.
Yeah.
Sure.
Exactly.
It's so weird that it's always like that. Like, Dumas is like, I'm writing a book. It's called The Three Musketeers. What's it about? It's about four Musketeers. I guess the thing is, in all the things, it's always been D'Artagnan is not a Musketeer. To begin with. Therefore, it is about the three famous Musketeers.
Yeah. But then the man in the Iron Mask, they don't set it up as the three Musketeers.
Right.
It's just, they are all Musketeers. Yeah.
It'd That's be like kind of if the you other... have, if you have like 12 angry men, but there's also like a woman in the room.
Yeah.
Well, because the man in the Iron
She's
Mask.
Just there.
Right.
There to get them coffee and
because
it's an old ass movie.
The man in the Iron Mask was going to be called Those Old Musketeers. That was going to be the name of it. And they went with Man in the Iron Mask. It's a much better title.
Then Iron Mask 2, Iron Mask 3, of course.
I liked Iron Mask 2. It's underrated, but it's actually not bad.
You know, I love what Shane Black did with Iron Mask 3.
The fact that it was at Christmas
into it. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. At the end of Iron Mask 1, when he says, I am Iron Mask. Awesome. Awesome.
How it all leads to Civil War, even though it's like hundreds of years later.
It's amazing how much they set up in that first one that, you know.
Pays off. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So.
Big fan of cheeseburgers.
We're talking about this movie. Yeah.
Speaking of setups.
Yes.
As we enter this candlelit room, we've
Have you announced the cut, though?
That's right. We are watching cut 2 of The Three Musketeers. It begins at 17 minutes, 24 seconds, and it goes until 34 minutes, 32 seconds. It begins with Aramis tutoring a woman in theology, and it ends with D'Artagnan sneaking through Richelieu's dungeon.
We'll ask Travis, who a man with long hair. Charlie Sheen's hair in this, real extensions, wig. Because you got to remember, he just came off shooting Hot Shots Part 2.
Oh, okay.
Also French.
Well, yeah. Yes. ooh, that's a good.
Because it's good looking hair.
Yeah.
It kind of has that Topper Harley vibe.
I'm going to say that Platt's probably the only one with extensions, because I think that's all natural Kiefer and Chris O'Donnell. Hard to say with Charlie Sheen. I could kind of go either way with that. But
well, if I was Chris O'Donnell, well, because he had long hair in Hot Shots Part 2.
Okay.
Remember, this is his Rambo.
Like a mullet.
A Rambo face, because they could have easily feathered this out. Mm. Correct?
Terrible wigdar, and as a kid, just assumed every actor's hair in movies was their real hair, and thought everyone just grew their hair out for the appropriate, for the role.
Well, Chris O'Donnell definitely would not ask to have that blonde afro, so obviously that's his real hair.
Yeah. Oh, I want to, while we're talking about Chris O'Donnell, I want to shout out and, air some grievances with another podcast.
Okay.
Over on Bat Minute. For like a year, when Niall and John were doing Batman Forever, Niall could not fathom that Chris O'Donnell was a heartthrob, was attractive. Did he not see this movie? Like,
look at those eyes.
I know, just that. Oh, I mean, I just want to smooch him.
In England, this movie was called Iron Mask 1, and so he didn't see it because he didn't know.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
This is a very anti-English movie, so I can...
Yeah.
We all know Niall is English.
Yes. Canonically English.
Yes. Right. So.
Right.
Well, hopefully at some point we'll have Niall on, and when we do, we can maybe this beef can get a beef counter beef.
Yeah, no, put his feet to the fire on this one.
Because in this movie, we talked about it in the first cut, everyone is so beautiful in this movie. Even Tim Curry is really good looking, and Oliver Platt is the best he's ever looked.
For sure. What was Oliver Platt coming off of with this? Because at this time, never heard of Oliver Platt.
I saved my Platt facts from last cut. If you'd like me to get into some,
we did not
facts.
Do the Platt facts
in this Charlie Sheen scene. In the Sheen scene,
in the Sheen scene, you're going to do Platt facts.
All right. What's the theme song for Platt facts?
Oh gosh,
you can add it in post.
Platt facts. Platt facts.
Why are you clapping?
Platt claps are not coming through.
Talking to those crazy Platt facts.
All right, how old is Oliver Platt when he's making this movie?
He's either 32 or 54.
He's 29. He's 29.
I can't imagine him. I don't know. Well, Kiefer was 27. He's
Kiefer's 27 in this.
Holy shit.
Oliver Platt is the oldest Musketeer. He is 33.
33. Oh, so he's
the
what Jonathan
Jesus.
Guessed for Kiefer. Yeah.
He's in his Jesus year.
Yeah.
Yeah. His top four on IMDb. Can you guys guess without looking?
Flatliners.
2012.
2012 is one of them, is number four.
Okay.
Lake Placid.
Number three. Yep.
Nice.
Is Three Musketeers on there?
That TV
number,
show
number
he was
one.
On. Okay. That TV show he was on.
Nope. No TV. Okay.
No TV?
On here.
The Bear?
Nope. Nope. No TV.
Not West Wing?
No TV.
Let's see. How about Fargo? TV shows? Come on.
It was Bicentennial Man is his number
Damn
two.
Damn it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah.
Sure. I never saw that movie, so.
You should. It's pretty good.
I got to join the Robot Boys for that.
Yeah.
Fuck those guys.
Okay. How about your favorite Oliver Platt performances? I mean, Three Musketeers is probably like top tier Platt.
I got to go Lake Placid because he has some great moments in that. He's just a smarmy douchebag, but he gets some real arrogant lines that are really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I love his recent turns in Fargo and The Bear. Like, I just love seeing him pop up in things.
It's this movie and Fargo. He's great in Fargo.
I'm a big fan of Flatliners, another Kiefer movie. He's in there with Kiefer. So that one's one of my faves.
I love him in this movie, but my wife would divorce me if I didn't say that I love him in West Wing.
Yeah.
No TV.
Oliver Babish.
And he's an executive decision.
Hmm.
Oh, wow. Always close to the president, Oliver Platt is. He is related to Princess Di through a maternal grandmother. He's like the second cousin removed of Princess Di. He says about this,
He's the second cousin of Princess Diana?
Second cousin removed of Princess Diana. Oh,
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know either. But it's just
there's a King Ralph.
Maternal grandmother.
Is there a King Ralph situation where he could become princess of...
He has big King Ralph energy, doesn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a quote from him about this movie. He says, "That was a really fun shoot. We were in Vienna and all over Europe in these glamorous locations, and you were getting to be in the Three Musketeers, riding around on horses with pipes and going wenching. I got nothing bad to say."
All right. So I've been mentioning the before and afters for each one of these actors. Before Three Musketeers on his IMDb list, Oliver Platt was in Benny and June, also came out in 1993. But unlocking a core memory that I always have buried in the back of my skull, in 1995, Oliver Platt played Paul Bunyan in 1995's Tall Tale, The Unbelievable Adventures of Pecos Bill, alongside Patrick Swayze and Roger Aaron Brown.
Directed by Jeremiah Chechik, I think, who also almost did a Musketeer movie. And Of course, Christmas Vacation.
I was in college. At that point, I wasn't watching weird stuff like that.
Yeah. The trailer for Tall Tale, The Unbelievable Adventures of Pecos Bill, also made by Disney, played before so many VHS copies of movies that I would watch.
Yeah.
The line, "We're coming," and then the kid yelling, "Not through our land," is like burned permanently in the back of my mind.
It's Kurt Russell, right? In that?
No, Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, Swayze, Platt, Nick Stahl, I think, is the kid. Scott Glenn is in there. Stephen Lang, I think, is the bad guy who says...
You're getting confused because Kurt Russell's in Executive Decision.
That's what it is, yeah.
Also, Rick, Robin, just to make sure we don't get a lot of notes about this, Executive Decision has nothing to do with the president.
Well, doesn't he make an executive decision?
I think the executive decision is that they let Steven Seagal die in that tube that is connecting the two planes.
Right.
And then the rest of the movie doesn't have Steven Seagal in it. And you're like, that's an executive decision.
More Platt facts. Pretty privileged background, which led to theater, but his break into acting in film came because he met Bill Murray at his cousin's Christmas party, who recommended Oliver Platt to Jonathan Demme, who then cast him in Married to the Mob.
Listen,
his cousin's or at one of Bill Murray's
second cousin
cousins
removed
because if Bill Murray in some way is related to Oliver Platt in some way related to Princess Diana, I want to know about that.
No, I believe it was just, I don't know, Platt's cousin. I don't know how Bill Murray ended. I mean, Bill Murray just ends up places.
That's true.
And we talked about O'Donnell's long-running TV career. Platt is also long-running, at least since 2015, not as long as O'Donnell, on Chicago Med. He's been many, many episodes of that.
Does now when we go from Platfax to Sheen Scene, are we going to talk about some of Charlie Sheen's movies soon?
Absolutely.
Okay, just want to make sure.
How old? We'll just go. We'll go for it.
How old is Charlie Sheen now?
Yes. How old? No. During the movie.
Okay. 93. He was 27. 93
Sheen.
He's 30. 29. He's 30.
You guys are dancing around it.
31? Yeah, I'm gonna say 31. Yeah.
It's 28.
Oh, 28.
God he's damn! 28 year old
crazy. Yeah.
Top four. Let's do it.
All right.
I really like the Getaway. Is that what it is called?
One of my faves. Not Christy in
Swanson.
Yeah. Great sex scene in that movie.
Yeah.
Sure.
Very memorable sex scene.
Yeah. Hot Shots.
The Chase came out 1 year after this.
Is Shot okay. Hot Shots on there?
No, Part Deux is sure. Actually Part Deux of his IMDb top four.
A Hot Shots is in there. That's good.
Is yes. Is Major League on there?
Nope. What? Another one of my faves.
Come on.
Is Ferris Bueller on there?
Nope. Another one that's memorable for sure.
Is Two and a Half Men.
Two and a Half Men is the fourth one. Yeah.
Is The Arrival on there?
No. Three Musketeers, of course, is one of them. It's funny. Part Deux is number two. Three Musketeers is number three.
Oh, okay.
What is his number one?
But it's too bad they couldn't slot Two and a Half Men.
Is it Young Guns? He's in it for 4 seconds.
Yeah, no.
Isn't there a scary? He's in a couple scary movies.
He is, but it's not in any of those. No.
Would we know this movie?
The TV Double show. One. This is a pretty. It's a movie about greed.
Oh.
And how
Wall
good
Street.
It is.
Oh, he's in Wall Street. Yeah,
Wall Street. Number one.
Scene in Hot Shots Part Two, where him and Martin Sheen are on different boats, and they yell, "I love you in Wall Street."
Some other faves I like: Red Dawn, Men at Work. Love that movie.
Wall Street 2, Money Never Sleeps.
I think Shia is in that movie. I never saw that one.
I never saw it. No, no one did. Don't worry.
Tons of TV. He was in the last two seasons of Spin City after Michael J. Fox had to leave. Two and a Half Men for 8 seasons. And then Anger Management, one of those crazy things where they paid him for syndication and they just filmed 100 episodes of TV show, 2 seasons, 100 episodes in like a year. And he's been making bank off of that. All three of those shows, he plays a character named Charlie.
he's too high to remember his own name.
Listen, right? Cocaine is a hell of a drug. Charlie Sheen was in four movies that released in 1993. You'll remember from Tim Curry facts, Loaded Weapon 1, Beyond the Law. Mm-hmm. No, Loaded Weapon 1, comma, another movie, Beyond the Law.
Yeah, he's like undercover in a
Deadfall. And the Three Musketeers. So he was actually in five movies. I miscounted because there's so many movies in the list.
So busy. So busy. Yeah. Too busy for sword training.
Yeah, exactly.
But yet he's top billed in this movie. I don't understand. Is he a bigger star than these guys?
Yes.
I would.
Yeah.
I get.
Because he made Hot Shots.
Yeah, I would have thought.
It just baffles me.
Yeah. Kiefer Sutherland seems like the top bill.
Yeah. Kiefer's later. Kiefer wasn't, you weren't going to see a movie to see Kiefer Sutherland. Like Kiefer Sutherland's not the pull. Charlie Sheen is the pull right now. It's funny. Two Nepo babies are fighting it out for, but I think Kiefer is a 30s and 40s. Like that is the Kiefer sans. Whereas right now we're in the Sheeniverse.
Charlie would not slow down in 1994. He would appear in The Chase
because of the cocaine.
Major League 2 and Terminal Velocity.
He was going at Terminal Velocity. Him and O'Donnell with his vertical limit and the Terminal Velocity.
Yep. Oh, I get those messed up all the time.
Hey, Vertical Limit is a better movie than Terminal Velocity.
I think I agree.
I remember
going to see Vertical Limit and the theater just laughing at it. And not that it was a comedy, but it was like one of those perfect storms of you're in the right theater where everyone is on board with just ridiculing and mocking this movie. And that was like the second time I'd seen it, because I went into it the first time thinking this might be a good movie. And then somehow going to see it again with friends and just
And knowing it's a great movie.
Great. I don't think you keep using that word, but I don't think you understand what it means.
It's great in that if you had heard 2 weeks ago's episode, I don't understand how Chris O'Donnell is famous and right. is still acting. He's not good.
Yeah.
And he always plays, like we're talking about this movie, he plays D'Artagnan. He doesn't. He plays Chris O'Donnell. He doesn't. Mm-hmm. There's no nothing. There's nothing to this character. Other than
is
he's trying to
be Sheen acting at all in this.
Right.
Yeah. He's doing like a voice. He's doing a weird voice. He's kind of talking like this.
He's talking. Yeah. His real name, Carlos Irwin mm-hmm. Estevez.
Yes.
Nicknames according to IMDb, The Machine, Good Time Charlie, Chuckles, and The Warlock from Mars.
Those are all given to him by him.
Yeah.
When he was fired from Two and a Half Men, $2 million per episode.
Jesus Christ.
Which is just ridiculous. He turned down Karate Kid, which would have just changed my other podcast completely.
Yeah.
He would have been the titular kid.
Yeah. This was 84.
He's 26 years old.
He was that age. Yeah. Ralph Macchio was like 21.
That's true.
Has a tattoo on his chest that looks like a note pinned to it that reads, "Be back in 15 minutes. His marriage to Denise Richards fell apart because apparently he had a huge problem with her vaccinating their kids. So he's anti-vaxxer. Huge problems with alcohol, drugs, domestic violence, accusations of rape. Probably won't want to get into any of that stuff here, but it's well worth a wiki read, I guess.
Look, he and Kiefer Sutherland, not great people. famous early, less than zero style, just on, the hanging out with RDJ. We all know, we know what's going on. This is the Hollywood Rat Pack running around.
So we fired from Two and a Half Men for shit talking Chuck Lorre. And then he had a huge meltdown. Everybody saw, he made claims in interviews that he was a warlock with tiger blood and Adonis DNA and that he was winning. He went to YouTube, smoked cigarettes through his nose, told one interviewer, "I'm tired of pretending I'm not special. I'm tired of pretending I'm not a total bitch and rock star from Mars."
See, that's why I think that nickname from Mars is that's him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He came out as HIV positive. And apparently because of this, something was dubbed the Charlie Sheen effect, which is the jump in searches on Google about HIV positive. Jumped up significantly. I'm assuming it's because so many of the ladies that he betted were like, "Wait a second, is this?
Yeah,
how bad is this?" And he also is in the Guinness Book of World Records for the quickest jump in Twitter followers, which is apparently a huge thing that gets to be in Guinness Book of World Records. So anyway, Aramis, he's here seducing a woman using the Book of Genesis, even though he has the book open halfway.
Yep. He's way too far into the Bible to be reading Genesis here. But he's talking about, the Garden of Eden, the temptation of Eve to eat the apple. And this woman that he is tutoring is getting real hot and bothered.
When people read the Bible to me.
I was looking in the IMDb cast list, trying to figure out who this woman is. And of course, the IMDb cast list is always so unhelpful.
It's real brief. And yeah.
I was getting a lot of Julie Haggerty vibes from Airplane, but that was like, 15 or 13 years earlier. So that wouldn't have worked out. And I'm like, yeah, but like the face kind of reminds me of what's her face.
Judy Greer is who she reminded
but she didn't start acting in movies until 97. I was like, who is this woman with that voice and that face?
This is Emma Moore, and Damsel is her only credit.
Yeah.
There's not, and I looked on the internet because you're asking, and I didn't see anything other than she played Damsel in Three Musketeers.
It's nigh impossible.
Maybe she did this and found religion. You don't know.
Yeah, maybe she was convinced. I love that Aramis is, I was kind of confused. I was like, is he using the Bible as like a seduction method, or is he really trying to tutor her? But he's just so goddamn hot that she can't. And of course, they're talking about original sin and doing something naughty. And she's married, of course. So, you know,
there
there's
are
a whole.
So many more salacious parts of the Bible that he could be reading from. And the fact that they're going with the creation story.
All right, let's hear your top
like,
four, Rick.
All right, Song of Solomon. Start just the whole
Leviticus.
I tell you, I can't go to bed without reading a little Corinthians.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna read Paul's letters to the Romans.
But anyway,
anyway, yeah,
yeah. So well,
right now, Father hurts. David's like, "Hey, come on, yeah.
Come on, guys, let's pull it back like, a little bit.
Let's maybe more Bible talk, maybe Bible boys." It's like, this is no. We're not going to ever entertain the idea of there being Bible boys. No.
Fuck those guys?
No. Robin. No.
No, that is a quagmire we do not want to get bogged down in.
So, let's go talk about this movie.
Yeah, so anyway, she back starts to Charlie getting Sheen. Hot and bothered, and she's like trying to kiss him, and he's like, "Madam, listen, this is all well and good. I'm cool.
He's 100%
with it, but I'm
there.
Also like your teacher."
Yeah. He's there to boner. Like, he's there to boner because when he finds out she's married, he's actually kind of like, "Oh, you're married."
Yeah. He says,
but I love that.
He says, "There's nothing unholy about expressing one's emotions. On the contrary, religion should be experienced in an all embracing way. We should feel free to express our spirituality." And she's like, "Bone me now."
Yeah. This is just Anakin explaining that the Jedi are encouraged to love.
I do He's love that his first reaction to the husband is like, "Oh, we're in danger. Let's pray."
Yeah,
which I don't know. That made me think like, "Oh, maybe he is that deeply invested in."
I think he is truly devout, you know, but. He's also not a, you know, he's done this before, obviously. He's, you know, used this theology sort of thing to bed women. Yeah. But he, I think, truly is like, "Well, you're married. This is a sin. Let's pray on it." You know,
he's half man of the cloth, half man of the con.
I do appreciate the detail that the husband is one of Richelieu's guards.
Yeah. Yes.
It's good. That was cool. He's also a terrible shot.
Yes. Well, let's be honest. In this movie at this time, all of these muskets, the fact that any of them hit anybody is pretty impressive.
They're just as likely as that bullet striking the vase on the windowsill behind them. It was equally likely that it was going to just blow the head off of one or both of them.
Yeah.
Based on the shrapnel coming out of the end of those things.
So we out of the room. We're running through the streets, right?
We're out of the Sheen scene. Yes.
And well, I mean, the Sheen scene continues into the mise en scene. Mise en Sheen.
We love Sheen.
That he escapes and falls on Dart, which knocks him to the ground. And
call him Dart.
He's Dart. And Dart. Oh yeah, Dart.
Yeah, I thought you were saying Dart.
By the way, at this moment in history, everyone in the world stopped where they were because the amount of dick energy from these two being this close together.
Ooh.
Oh, can you imagine the heat coming off that pouch?
When they smash together, it is like,
oh my God.
Fusion? Is that fusion? Or is that fission?
I haven't seen Oppenheimer, but I think that's what happens.
So I've heard that in the previous cut, there was a lot of codpiece, you know, talk.
Mm-hmm.
Who's got the biggest hog of the four three?
It's, you know. Well, it's
the characters.
Yes.
Or actors. Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, it's France in the 1600s. So,
yeah, but we know that Chris O'Donnell has a bigger hog than Val Kilmer. Like that has been, that's an established fact.
Sure.
But we don't know that means that he's got the biggest hog here.
I got you. See, you want to play the Kevin Bacon game.
Yes.
And also, we've seen Kevin Bacon's
Bacon.
So we're going to have to play the Kevin Bacon game, but it's with his bacon. The bacon.
Yeah, dog.
I just think the quietest talker has secretly got the biggest hog. So
it's Kiefer?
It's Kiefer. Yeah. I think Sheen's got the smallest.
Oh, okay.
I would go Oliver Platt with the smallest.
Oh.
Platt has other ways.
He uses his talented tongue.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm glad this has turned into Hog Boys. I'm glad that this is now this show.
We finally devolved.
Happy birthday, everybody.
Yeah. I want to make another reference to a previous season of ours with all this Dar talk.
Dar.
Mark Singer did Beastmaster 2 in 1991 and then Beastmaster 3 in 1996. So he's still in Beastmaster shape, ostensibly speaking, because I haven't seen the Beastmaster sequels. But he could have been D'Artagnan. He would have been an older D'Artagnan.
He would have been the old one, so he would be young Dar's father in this movie.
Yeah.
It's all full circle.
It's all full circle.
We could have had Dar apostrophe Tanyan.
Yeah. All right, so he lands on him. It's super funny because I love Chris O'Donnell's face. He's like, oh.
Yeah, this time I think it's it. Dart is much more justified in being angry. Like, you just fell on me and then gave me this lighthearted apology. Like, oh, sorry. Yeah. And then Aramis is the one that's quick to anger.
Nope. I still think he's a dick because he does apologize. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, hey, you landed on me. He's like, that's why I apologized.
He said, thank you. You broke my fall perfectly. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just some pillow for him. And then he's like, but I do apologize for the inconvenience. It's just kind of like, oh.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of the duels stacking up? But I don't like that all the duels are arranged at different times and different places, but then they all come together at the site of the first duel. I think I'd like it better if they were all, because the three people challenging the duel, like, make it that they want to go to the same place. Like, that is their dueling spot.
Right. Also, who does a duel at 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
I know.
Only assholes.
Well, this is like maybe an hour after Porthos wakes up. Wait, sorry, Aramis wakes up. Aramis probably gets up. Aramis, the character, probably gets up at dawn, has a prayer, and three duels in one day. That's the last line of this scene.
Also, just so you guys know, it wasn't until the 1500s. At this point, the times were different for a day, what a day was, just so you know. Mm. Not that I don't think 2 o'clock existed or whatever it was called at that point, but it was not the same. We didn't have 12 hour. We had 12 hours, but to peasants, daytime is when the sun comes up to when the sun goes down. That's my daytime. Just very interesting. Yeah. Just trying to inject some real history into this contrivance of history.
It's historically accurate movie.
I mean, these people are hot for 1990s. Hot. They're hot now. Imagine how hot they are for 1600s. They had all their teeth. At this point, Charlie Sheen did not have HIV that we know of.
That we know about.
Yeah. The important thing is that the duel is going to happen at the Carmadisho Monastery at 2 o'clock. So now
what's the address of that, Rick?
Address.
What's the driving? Like,
look,
how much?
I've got a trip, traffic. I've got a trip advisor. I've got to go to three different places. I got to go to the ruins. I got to go to the cathedral, and I got to go to this place. Where am I going?
Yeah, it's at 6 Rue Jean Ferrandi. It's
how far
about,
is it from?
It's a 15-minute walk.
15-minute walk.
Pronouncing this like Charlie Sheen. Rue de Jean Ferrandi.
I don't have a French accent that I try and put on.
Oh, now I have a French accent, and I'm not in this scene yet. I will show up later. Don't worry.
Yeah.
So he left me somewhere again.
He left me with an Oliver Twist street urchin.
Yeah. The two locations in modern day France are about 1.2 kilometers away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, a 15-minute walk. But I imagine that the monastery that we're talking about probably used to be located closer to the Jardin du Luxembourg, where ostensibly the ruins outside the city would also be located. You know, it's inconsequential exactly where these things are.
People love it when we talk about Paris. Day,
yeah, it's all the same place. Yeah. Paris, the city where in modern day Duncan MacLeod would have his barge.
Hmm. Of course.
Because you guys love it when I talk about the Highlander TV show.
I do. I love it.
The only Duncan I know is Duncan Donuts.
All Duncan, right. What are you talking about?
For some reason, I thought you'd say Duncan, Idaho.
Yeah,
anyway.
There's another Paris connection to Highlander. Doesn't Connor have a duel with I'm assuming that's in France.
No, yes. I think that's like
in Paris.
That's like the colonies. That's.
So are you thinking about the famous duel on Boston Common where he was black and drunk?
Oh, okay.
They're just wearing wigs, so it seems like they're in France. I feel like they should be in France.
Yeah.
Yes. Shall we move on to the seduction of Queen Anne?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm really glad that I'm using Google Maps and not the jacked up map that Queen Anne is looking at.
Yeah, I want to talk about your effed up map maker. Like, you nailed Africa. And then America is kind of like, it's like very fuzzy around the edges.
Well, no one really knows yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like something is going on with like, apparently Japan is connected to the top of Russia.
Sure.
And then like you got China and Korea are obviously there.
And below it, I can't tell if that's Australia or Antarctica.
What is going on?
It says Antarctica. There's some letters down there.
Oh, does it?
I see an N, a T.
Oh, yeah.
A R.
It could be Australia, though, in French.
No, that's definitely Antarctica.
Yeah.
There's some geography problems in this movie for sure, because this was brought up in cut one and I said, oh, we'll get to it. But in the scene, Richelieu says Austria's loss is France's gain. Queen Anne was not from Austria. She was from Spain. She had the title of Anne of Austria because the rulers of Spain belong to the House of Austria. And that's about as
Remember,
far as
they're
I got
all,
before
they're
I
all connected.
Started falling asleep.
Yeah.
They're all.
But she's not actually Austrian or from Austria or representing Austria. She's from Spain. Huh. So it's kind of weird that they're like, yeah, you know, Austria.
You know who else is from Austria? Spain? Our favorite Spanish peacock.
Oh,
Ramirez.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Well, I mean, that's all the accent you obviously can tell. But and also, yeah, we tried jumping ahead last cut talking about Gabrielle Anwar. So we have to talk about her. How old is she? She's about how pregnant she is. Jonathan is very attracted.
So she's of birthing age.
Right here?
Yeah. That's why I find her attractive. Let's see. She is 22, which seems like a terrible thing.
Very close.
Yeah.
Very close. Yes. 23.
Okay.
Or 23 Musketeers.
It's too young.
Her top four. We kind of talked about it. Number one is Three Musketeers. Number two is Son of a Woman. Number three, you guys probably won't remember, but Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead, which is a title of a movie that exists.
I know the movie.
Yeah.
And then the fourth is Burn Notice.
Oh, yeah.
I want to give a shout out because some friends of mine years ago did a podcast talking about the, I think it's a British children's television series, Press Gang, which she showed up in as like a teenager, and she's really good in that too. I think that's what kind of gave her launch. She's also
I know her from a horse diving movie, like a Disney movie about
Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken.
Okay,
that's right. Yeah, yes. I've never seen it.
That's what I know her from, and
I
this movie,
she's in that.
She's kind of a actor that I have no real connection with other than those two things.
Yeah.
And she has a kid with famous from the movie The Program, Craig Sheffer.
Yeah.
That's the baby that she has from this.
Okay.
If you want to go see Craig is right now currently doing movies, it seems, with Executive Decisions star Steven Seagal. Go watch Code of Honor, which I'm sure is a great movie.
But right around this time he was Brat Pack adjacent. You know, he was
Craig Sheffer.
He wasn't as big as them, but
because he was in Some Kind of Wonderful. Age. He was in that.
I'll have to look up who that is.
You know him. He's a that guy. If you saw him, you're going to be like,
Fun
oh, yeah.
In fact, she had a kid with him. They divorced. According to IMDb, she ends up getting remarried and has two more kids with this other guy. And Craig Sheffer is the godfather to these other two kids, which is like, a weird arrangement.
Well, maybe they just fell out of love.
And
I recognize the face. Yeah.
Well, it's all for love. There's another Guinness Book fact. Gabrielle Anwar was in the Guinness Book of World Records for the record for worlds. Oh, wait. I wonder if you guys could guess what special gift do you think Gabrielle Anwar has that would get her into the Guinness Book of World Records? It's somebody. It's the world's fastest talker.
Really?
She was in some sort of competition against auctioneer sports announcers.
She beat
announcers.
The micro machine guy? I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know. But she said she won basically because she was really nervous and just wanted to get it over with.
Maybe she's the fastest talker among amateurs. Whereas I think the micro machine guy is the professional.
Come on, John Machida.
Auctioneers are pretty John Machida. Fast talker. Yeah. So anyway, that's all I have for Gabrielle.
Yeah, so Gabrielle Anwar, Queen Anne, she is looking at this giant map, and from off screen we hear homesick from Cardinal Richelieu, and she is startled, and he says, "I often have that effect on people," in a response to her saying that he surprised her.
Travis, and, real hair or wig on Cardinal Richelieu?
Wig, yeah.
Okay, he's got a wig.
I don't think we ever see him without the little headpiece. Yeah.
Oh, you think it comes with the headpiece?
I mean, why not? That's a lot of unnecessary hair growth for something that they're going to, have.
Because he doesn't have that much hair, I don't think, is in the shadow. He's got a majorly receding hairline, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Well, the wig here, it looks a lot better than the wig he had to wear as the Girl Scout knockoff in the Lethal Weapon spoof movie. That he was in, like little pigtails and stuff.
Is it
like
better
that?
Than the wig he wore as Dr. Frankenfurter?
I wish that he had busted out some sort of Frankenfurter line. If he like, don't get strung out by the way that I look. Don't judge a book by its cover.
Yeah,
man, I'm sure you guys have already talked about Tim Curry, but
yeah,
he is a delight.
Oh, is it? Everything he's in,
and this is another of those like. It feels like Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, in that, he is obviously, they wanted an Alan Rickman type, and he stands toe to toe with Alan Rickman's sheriff in this. Like, this is a great casting, great character. He's fun. He's
sassy. I keep doing smarmy. The hand motion.
Yeah,
he does this a lot. This like kind of like a look at me. I'm so evil.
I'm so evil. Yeah. And yeah. He's got. We talked about it on the crossover. Was it Basil Rathbone as Prince? I don't remember who he was playing, but he was Prince that John? Sassy.
He was Sir Guy of Gisborne, didn't he?
Which one was the real smarmy
Sheriff of Nottingham?
Prince John was definitely the most.
Well, Claude Rains was kind of smarmy. Claude Rains had kind of like that. He has
That's right. I mix up the names of Claude Rains and Basil Rathbone, so I'm never sure which one was which, but that's who he's kind of channeling Claude Rains,
And I'm sure the real Cardinal Richelieu never tried to seduce the real Queen Anne, but you hire Tim Curry and it's like, you got sexy energy. He's just got it. He's carrying it in every scene.
But you want him to take that cardinal robe and just drop it and just be in the full Frankenfurter underneath. I think one thing we haven't brought up, and I'm glad that Travis is here for this. You can tell a lot about a person by where they recognize Tim Curry from. So that begs the question: where do you like when you hear Tim Curry? Where do you remember like seeing him from?
Man.
What's your Tim Curry movie? Because mine is Muppet Treasure Island.
Okay. It's almost like who's your prime Curry? Like what?
Right.
When someone says Tim Curry, what do you see him as?
Yeah.
That's tough because he's in so many things. I think
there are no wrong answers, but we'll tell you if
there are
you're
no
right.
wrong answers. For this
well,
one.
Yeah, I think visually it might be this. But I know that I would have heard the voice before this in Legend, which is a movie I would have watched several times before this. And then, again for the voice, Ferngully is my like go-to Tim Curry. But I think visually it might be this. Cause at this point when I saw this for the first time, I wouldn't really have known what, Rocky Horror was. I definitely never hadn't seen it, and still haven't seen it. But yeah, Tim Curry is one of those chameleon type actors who's been in so many things. He's played so many characters, so many memorable characters. But I think this might be my Curry.
Robin, who is your Curry role?
Oh gosh, it's either Frankenfurter or Pennywise. It's one of those two.
So it's Congo.
I am afraid.
Right.
Yeah. Mine's Congo.
What's really? His name in that? Herkimer, Hergesheimer, or something like that?
Yeah. Polkamoral. Yeah.
When he's eating his little desserts, he tells him to stop.
I have never seen Congo. And
it's good curry.
Speaking of incredibly accurate movies, you want to know what it's like to live in Africa? Congo's the movie.
Rick?
We're gonna have to ask each and every guest who their Tim Curry movie is. But yeah, I've never actually seen Congo, so hearing the respect that Jonathan is putting on it, I might need to like see.
It's just because he's a Russian in that. He's
it's,
a Russian.
It's if you take that character he plays in whatever video game it was with Spice, you know.
Oh yeah.
If you take that character, that's who he's playing in. That energy is what he's putting into Congo.
Excellent.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Speaking of pretty great roles, we do get to see some more Queen Anne acting once the king arrives.
Mm.
King Louis. Yes.
Oh, I have in my notes Karen Carpenter, because that dude looks like Karen Carpenter.
This guy sucks.
I don't have much about him. His actor is Hugh O'Connor. How old was he?
Oh, like 12.
Oh, no, not well done, Hugh. Not well done. It's bad. He's 13 years old.
He's a little Lord Fauntleroy here.
Yeah.
His top four, I'm sure you guys
know. His top four.
Number one is Chocolats. Number two is Three Musketeers. Number three is My Left Foot. He played a young Daniel Day-Lewis.
Huh.
And he's number four is The Young Poisoner's Handbook. Irish actor, mostly at Irish films. In 2020, Irish Times listed him as number 49 on their list of top 50 Irish actors.
I've seen him.
About him.
Yeah. I've seen him in something the last couple years. And I was like, who is this guy? I recognize him and looked him up and was like, oh, he's the shitty king. And
the shitty king.
Oh my gosh. I want him to, like, at one point in this movie, be like, berries and cream, berries and cream. I'm a boy who loves berries and cream. But he walks in and with his, like, prepubescent balls haven't dropped energy. Mm. He's like, why did you cancel my guards?
They're my friends. I'm the one that wants to say goodbye to them. Mm.
Yeah. And when he starts to exert himself, even just a little bit, that's when they cut over to Queen Anne. And she's like, oh.
I haven't seen this side of him. You can say, I like that reaction. But, that's a good moment of like her. Like, because beforehand, she was saying, oh, he's seems uncertain. And a touch of like, does she think maybe he's gay and doesn't want to be married to her? That's the vibe I get from her. Like, she's not certain of his, you know, commitment.
I wasn't
sure
if it was like she was saying he was like inexperienced. He's so young. Like, he doesn't know what the heck he's doing, or if he doesn't. I mean, like Gabrielle Anwar, what's going on here?
How much better would this movie be if it was a 14-year-old boy who walks in and you're just like, oh, just so like, that's how it is.
Yeah. I'm also James like, I get the vibe because I just recently watched Braveheart and he has the same vibe as the Longshanks son who's going to be king and doesn't want his wife, you know, that sort same kind of thing. But
I wish he'd walked in and been like, why did you just miss my Musketeers? Also, she's not from Austria. She's from Spain.
Right. Why do we keep saying Austria? That's just her title. Yeah, it's crazy that he makes the son of Jack Palance and Hawk the Slayer seem a lot more manly.
Drogo? Drogo, son of...
Oh, gosh.
Canonically, though, later on, D'Artagnan will, by the time we get to Iron Mask 2, she falls in love with D'Artagnan. D'Artagnan's got rid of that other girl, and he fathers the twins. that her babies will be the twins that become Luke
and Leia.
I'm so confused right now.
I'm very confused.
The Man in the Iron Mask is about these people.
Yeah.
These people later on.
Yeah.
The king has not sired a son. Her kid is D'Artagnan's kid. Spoilers for the Man in the Iron Mask.
I completely forgot. I need to watch. Man in the Iron Mask is a sequel.
I didn't realize. She had the baby. Yeah, she has the D'Artagnan's children, because it's a twins, but one of them is put in. Doesn't matter. The point is, this doesn't end well, guys.
In Iron Mask, whatever.
Iron Mask 2?
Is it this guy, this king, he's playing the Leonardo DiCaprio role, right?
No. He is the father of Leonardo DiCaprio, and he has died. Because by this point, the queen was by herself in Man in the Iron Mask.
I think I...
Gotcha.
My, like, recollect, or my understanding of this time period, this period of history is real.
Well, for one thing, it's not real. It's Alexander Dumas doing it 200 years later. So
literally writing fan fiction.
Yeah,
but he's still writing about, you know, this real king and these real people. And that's, I'm real fuzzy on French history. So,
well, go watch Napoleon, because it'll clear it right up.
Okay.
It's word for word exactly what happened during the Napoleonic words, which has nothing to do with this either. Because it's 100 years from now.
Yeah. But see, this also feels like it's contemporary with, like, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. It's like, oh, yeah, but they have guns. So maybe it comes a few years later. You know. Yeah.
Was it in the 1400s or was it in the 1500s?
It was 1194.
Oh, my God. You're 500 years before.
Right.
Okay.
But in my head, this is all happening at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
All right, so we go with the scene. We have like a quick scene between Richelieu and Rochefort, just tying up loose ends. He wants those three musketeers caught, or else you're gonna lose another eye.
Don't let only having one eye impair your vision.
then he chokes him with the force.
I
hope you haven't lost the ability to see the depth of this situation.
Rochefort's costume is awesome.
Julie Joplin's like, I have.
And if you look at it, it's not black. It's blue.
Is it?
Well, he is a former musketeer.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, we're going to find out in the confrontation in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Shall we move on to it? Because I have nothing about this scene other than the Richelieu is Rochefort is the stooge for Richelieu. Yes,
it's the cardinal complaining about, oh, the king is just a boy. Find those lost musketeers. I'm going to cut out your other eye if you don't. Cut to a bar filled with Richelieu's guards that have been beaten up, tied up.
Are they murdered? Are they dead?
I thought they were murdered.
I think some of them are dead. Some of them are dead.
Because Charlie Sheen is cleaning his sword.
Yeah.
The ones keeled over on the table, they're dead. The ones obviously tied up in the chairs and struggling, I think they're alive.
Also dead.
This is reminiscent of a typical bar night with Kiefer Sutherland and Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
This happens all the time. They're like,
they just turned on the cameras. This wasn't even part of the scene.
Okay. Imagine for a moment that the musketeers were the bad guys in this movie, and we come into this scene where they are sitting casually amongst the dead bodies that they have just murdered, and how unhinged that would be.
The way some of the bodies at the table are laying, they poisoned them. They're not, because they're all just like, like they all just fell head first over. Unless they didn't fight. Three of those guys, they didn't fight. They are sitting at the table,
right? Those are just the first guys that they snuck in, stabbed, and then they fought the rest of them.
What would have made this scene? They put them in there. They're like, okay, well, he's dead on the ground. Wouldn't it be funny? Hey,
you know how Porthos, cool this is going to look?
Porthos. It's definitely Porthos. Remember, he's fucking around up in the rafters right now. So he's like, guys, I got a great idea. I'm going to have them laying here like they're asleep. Isn't that funny?
I would have loved it if the camera shifted over and we see Jason Momoa painting one of their toenails.
Oh, this has big Jason Momoa energy. Porthos does in this scene, especially.
All right, so Rochefort enters with the guard. Aramis, I love that Aramis winks and then calls him Cyclops.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the guy, the head guard that's below. I would say assistant to the head guard.
Regional,
regional guard is this guard.
Mm.
Is his nose real? It bothers me.
I was distracted in this scene and the one coming up when they interrupt the duel. Is this Colm Feore? Actor Colm Feore?
It's not, but I can see that.
It looks like him a lot here, like a young Colm Feore. And later when he addresses them, when he interrupts the duel.
Right.
Like I looked up the, you know, an IMDb. I can't find who this guy is.
It's so weird that he's not Colm
Feore, but he.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't find anything on him. And I'm like, why does this movie have so many glaring errors of just, this is a Disney film.
The cast list. Yeah. Is just real, real sparse. Yeah.
Did the House of Mouse just not care about giving credit to their actors?
Yeah.
I hope that's not,
maybe.
I hope that's not something that sticks around.
I guess we could always fast forward to the end and look at the actual credits, but
those credits are not going to help us.
I also just noticed there's no smoke coming out of Kiefer's pipe.
Oh no! See, it's for the look. He don't light it.
Yeah. Okay.
I gotta get that pipe.
He just likes the taste of it. I had a friend in high school who did that with cigarettes. He did not. He goes, cigarettes taste like raisins when you don't smoke them. And he would put it in his mouth, and he would walk around with an unlit cigarette in his mouth most of the night.
Okay. They do have like a little honey taste to them. I can see something there. Yeah.
So the Cardinal Guard says you're under arrest. Athos says, under whose authority? We get the great entrance of Rochefort, who says, mine. Yeah. And he walks out from inside of his guards. The poncho. Well, okay. Not the ponchos. The tunics that the guards wear.
I like it better. Call them ponchos.
Yeah.
That's very French.
It creates such a visual wall for Rochefort to hide behind.
Also been better if Rochefort had bumped into the guy on his left as he walked in, like, sorry, I can't see you, literally I can only like I've only got like a certain peripheral.
He's got a real eye for detail.
He does.
I do appreciate how his hatched eye is in shadow. You don't see it lit in this scene.
Very well done.
Yeah.
He tells him, he goes, this is where we get our background on Rochefort. We learned that he was kicked out for conduct unbecoming a musketeer. So
I wonder what that conduct was.
I assume it was doing stuff for the freaking, I'm sure this is when he got under the sway of the Cardinal.
The Cardinal.
Yeah.
That's what I'm betting.
Palpatine.
Cardinal Palpatine.
I mean, Tim Curry did voice him.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, they're the only, these three are actually special. This is why they keep getting referred to as the three musketeers, because they're the only ones that actually did stand up against Rochefort and then cast him out of the musketeer group. So
personal beef with all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking of beef, if you all look up, you've got the chandelier that Porthos jumps onto. Lovely shower of dust, very unkempt in here. But then he takes out all of these Cardinal Guards.
If you also, right before he jumps, when the dust jumps off, look up there. There are not our tied up and dead soldiers up in the rafters, too.
That's what he was doing.
Yeah, see it. Yeah.
He was up there killing people that were in the rafters. What is going, what kind of battle plan was this that they brought on these three?
Listen, this is musketeers. If they were not the heroes, they would be psychopaths.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is classic swashbuckler stuff. You'd be climbing in the rafters dueling. I mean, you're all over the place. Lots of balancing and swashbuckling.
How many people in this Disney film have died so far? Are we talking two dozen? Two dozen deaths?
It feels like so not a lot because you haven't seen a lot of bloodshed or fighting at this point. And until talk about it later, but this feels like a bloodless movie until it isn't. Makes sense, but we'll get into it.
And I love that they made the fat guy here is the one that brings on the shit, you know, put all Porky Porthos up there.
The fat guy, he's like 185 pounds.
Real lard ass.
Listen,
and this was for the past and future, you know, however podcasting works. I talked about this. I mentioned this moment in our live recording for Minute of Thieves in Indianapolis that when I talked about the chandelier drop as a trope, this was on that list as well.
This is top five chandelier drops of the modern era, I would say.
Depends on how many people they take out, you know.
It does.
That's how I'd rank it.
It got a lot. I mean, it cleared the room here. So aside from Rochefort.
Yeah. And it really sets up the whole, like, everybody circling around Rochefort and threatening him and stuff like that. Do we want to talk about Porthos's Rochefort? Isn't that a type of smelly cheese?
Ah, so good.
Am I the only one with the fun fact?
Or you? So Porthos is not thinking about Rochefort. He's thinking about Roquefort, a sheep milk blue cheese from southern France. It actually has to conform to similar rules as champagne. You know, champagne is only champagne if it comes from the Champagne region of France. Otherwise, it's sparkling wine. Very similar to that. Only those cheeses aged in the natural Combalou caves of Roquefort sur Solzon may bear the name of Roquefort.
Otherwise, it's sparkling cheese.
Yeah. The cheese is white, tangy, creamy, and slightly moist with veins of blue mold. The regional cuisine in and around Aveyron includes many Roquefort-based recipes for main course meat sauces, savory tarts and quiches, pies, and fillings.
This sounds like shit. I don't want to eat your moldy cave cheese. Fuck off.
All cheese is technically moldy. So
sure.
Take with that.
Now, would it not be pronounced the same?
It wouldn't be pronounced the same. Also, it wouldn't be actually, this is not a joke from 1625 when this movie takes place. This cheese was certified in 1925 with that name. Like literally like 300 years later. I think that's hilarious.
This feels like a joke. Yeah. A 90s joke. Like,
not this is where the movie finally breaks for me as not being authentic is when he says, not every scene scene that's had D'Artagnan in it so far.
Right.
I just wanted to like send Oliver Platt a little gotcha, you know, from Sword Boys. So
anything that Oliver Platt and Charlie Sheen do in this movie is instantly redeemed whenever they do their sword blade high five.
Ting ting.
Oh yeah.
Does it go clink clang? I don't think so.
No, because it's just a single cling.
Yeah, that's right. It's a cling.
It's a clink clang.
Maybe it's a ting.
It's a clang clang.
But I love that Aramis and Porthos have that thing that they do. Like, that's their buddy buddy thing.
They are we might be saying the same thing. They are the Donatello and Michelangelo of this foursome.
I thought they were the Gort and the dwarf's name. Gort Balden energy.
Yeah, no, same thing. Yeah.
All right. Shall we move on to the duels?
That's right.
Are now behind the ruins, quote unquote.
If they were fighting, Porthos would be the duel of fats.
Yeah, I'm very glad to see that the Parisian street urchin D'Artagnan gave his horse to actually held onto the horse and didn't instantly steal it. That's great.
I am back in the movie.
He had to chase him down, and he's the 3 o'clock duel.
You just see Athos leaning against the tree holding that pipe, and I'm just like, God damn it, Kiefer Sutherland is just the coolest person.
Doesn't he
in this
just
movie?
He's just the coolest.
He looks just like a 27-year-old man.
Yes.
He's great.
He is great.
This location is definitely in the Jardin du Luxembourg. It was established in like the 16 teens as this giant Central Park-esque giant garden that the royals would have.
How far away is it from the other two places?
Oh, it's like adjacent to the Palace of Luxembourg, and it's like I said, a 10-minute walk.
So they did the guy a favor. They could have had him going all over Paris.
Okay,
yeah. So, all pretty centrally located. Probably something that Athos already knew that Aramis and Porthos were going to the same place to meet up with the same guy. There's definitely an air of like pre-planning here on their part.
Was wondering if they were surprised or not, because it's like, wait, you can't fight him. I'm fighting him.
Yeah.
Was that pre-planned or was that?
But I like that Athos is there first, so we get to have that nice cut to black, and the voiceover says, the following takes place between noon and 1 p.m. on the day the Musketeers are disbanded. Events do not occur in real time.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is the beep. First time we've ever had three major characters show up on three horses, so I think they need names. Like, I think those three. I think Aramis, Porthos, who all have amazing names. How do you name the three Musketeers horses?
Vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry.
Aw, I love it. That's their name.
The original flavors of a Three Musketeers bar were
and Neapolitan, which is very French.
Well, that's where that's the name of their stable.
Yes.
They get parked in the Neapolitan. But I'm open to other names. I
Rick is dying.
Well, what's the other one? Yeah. Stabby is D'Artagnan.
Stabby. My okay. name is Stabby.
I had just assumed, you know, pokey, slicey, and dicey.
Unfortunately, Scarlet has been downgraded in this movie to being Gerard's horse that never wants Gerard to ride on her. So
yeah, Scarlet was earlier in the movie. We'll see Scarlet maybe at the end. I can't remember if he's on a horse at the end. I don't think he is. Mm. He's walking, I believe.
How weird is it that guy is Paul McGann?
It is so weird.
No, right.
Yeah. Everybody in this movie isn't that weird that that guy is here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like later on when we get to Rebecca De Mornay, we're all kind of like, hey. Right. Actress Rebecca De Mornay decided to show up for this movie.
And Julie Delpy's in this movie. Yep. And
she's just almost nobody.
I not much about the scene I have until the guards show up, other than I just love that. I love that Dart is just like, I love you guys. I love the Musketeers, but I am honor bound to kill you all. So I guess we're going to have to get on with this.
Not loving the idea that I have to kill you now, but I am definitely going to kill you. And then I'm going to kill you. And then I'm going to kill you. And despite my dream of being a Musketeer, I'm going to ostensibly end the Musketeers.
If he kills all the Musketeers, he can say I'm a Musketeer because no one can stop me, I guess. But it's a fun setup.
Apparently, when it comes to Musketeers, despite there being three, there can be only one.
What?
I see what you did there.
He's going to decapitate each one of these and absorb their power.
Yeah.
God, imagine the sexual prowess he would have with the mouth of Porthos, the smolder of Aramis, and the broodingness of the other one.
If he had the magic of Orko too, it'd be amazing. He's just Orko things. He must have been a Musketeer at one time. He's got
your
the
powers
look.
Combined.
Lots of comedy. Great comedy. Yep. Only a fool would try and arrest us twice in one day. You're under arrest. A fool. And then I love the trope of like, whoa, hold on. We got to talk. And then like, you see that in some like comedy action movies, like, hold on. And the villain is kind of like, villain's like, okay, I guess we're going to stand here and wait for you to be ready to fight us.
I really like that Porthos line where he says, of course we intend to resist, but just give us a moment.
Yeah.
Like, no, we are going to resist. There is going to be a fight.
Remember, this is a different time, guys. It was a much different, everyone was a gentleman. It was a much more urbane way of fighting.
Right.
Very American. Just give us a moment. All right. And I think the tagline for Three Musketeers should be here from D'Artagnan's quote. It should be Disney's The Three Musketeers. Excuse me, but there's four of us.
Yeah. I love that moment when they huddle up and like, instantly Porthos shoves him away.
Yeah.
Because like, you know he's going to butt in and say, but there's four of us. So I like that little precursor to him saying there are four of us.
I would also enjoy Three Musketeers, Disney's Three Musketeers, feisty indeed. Mm.
You can't sit with us.
Yeah.
on Wednesdays, we wear blue.
And they just keep, I love the whole huddle and introduction. And they're like, okay, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Pleasure. Everyone.
What a great, the way they shot that, where they all turn and go, ha.
Yeah.
It's kind of because they pull back the camera a little bit. It's a
Robin's
fun,
background.
My background. Zoom background.
Yeah.
I love it. One of the best parts.
Well, because we get that, like, guys, remember this, because this is going to happen at the end of the movie. Actually, it happens, I think, three times in this movie where they stand like this, like the Four Musketeers. Ha ha, here we come.
Yeah.
That was so, also one of the stag lines was, ha ha, here we come.
Yeah. Hey, hey, we're the Musketeers.
Hey, hey, we're the tears. I'm so glad they color coordinated this fight. It would have been, yes. Oh my God. Yeah. Imagine.
I think that's the biggest like visual cue from the Three Musketeers story is that Musketeers wear blue, Cardinal Guards wear red, and that's how you can keep them apart.
I really wanted the Cardinal Guards, though, to have just one bar across their chest so it looked like a minus, so it would be the pluses versus the minuses. Instead, they're all wearing pluses.
The spoof movie of this, you know, had there... Yeah, man, if there had been just one more of a movie in this sort of vein... But then we would have gotten a spoof. I guess Men in Tights kind of did, but not.
If Men in Tights had been successful, they could have done a Three Musketeers version of it.
That'd be a good visual joke, though. Yeah.
That would be.
Yeah, Men in Tunics. huge sword fight.
Huge sword fight.
Are you going to break it all down?
That needs a breakdown.
Cue the music.
It's a sword fight breakdown.
The Dart fights the head of the guard. Aramis, the least trained actor, is fighting two guards at the same time.
Yeah. But a good example of him skipping sword training is that you're going to see Charlie Sheen throwing a lot of fisticuffs. When it comes to sword fighting, he's going to get up close and he's going to start throwing hands.
And I like a movie where they have two people on one person like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Believe it. Emmanuel in Space is another great
sword movie.
Great sword movie.
Jonathan is going to wheel out the giant bronze magic mirror. And
here it is. Just my porn mirror. Here we go.
He's going to turn it on, and we're all going to see a lot of stuff we don't
want to
see.
Oh, turn that off. Oh. It's funny that D'Artagnan, because I guess Chris O'Donnell is the star of this, except Charlie Sheen is. D'Artagnan is the one that fights the head of the guard. It's not. I figured Athos should be the one fighting the head of the guard, the more experienced fighter.
And he is the youngest, so he has to like do the jumps.
Prove himself.
You notice the rest of the actors, the keeper's like, I will not be jumping. I will be walking down steps.
That old man, Kiefer Sutherland.
And Platt are like, uh-uh. I'm going to do fun things that are funny, and I might punch him, which is, is punching in a sword fight? This is a great question, moral question for sword boys. Mm. Is punching in a sword fight considered bad sword form? Or is the point of a sword fight to win?
All right. Mm.
I think it depends on the style of fighting.
Yeah.
Which this is that fencing style where it seems a bad form to punch.
All right. Because
they're so far away from each other.
We don't want to go back. We don't want to go back there, but we need to visit the cave outside the mechanical shark room in Red Sonja to the conversation that Sonja had with Prince Tarn, where she said there's a difference between fighting and fencing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what the Musketeers do is fencing, but Aramis, he's a fighter. And so he's going to throw in those fists and things like that.
Gotcha.
Porthos is more of a Batman because he has gadgets.
He does. He's a gadgeter.
Yeah,
the punch, closing the punching thing, though, I think if you're like cross swords and close to each other, like a nice like punch him in the face and then back away and then continue with swords is probably the best and most civil technique.
Yeah, I think the example of getting in close during a sword fight was what we saw with D'Artagnan versus Gerard, where when they got in close, they were each holding on to the other's sword and then they pushed each other away so that they can continue sword fighting. It's not so much we're fencing, we're honorable, I'm going to punch you. It's like, I don't know, we're fighting for life here.
Yeah, I think Kiefer's the most, Kiefer and D'Artagnan are the most like really swording it. Like they're actually like sword fighting the whole time. Whereas Oliver Platt comes out with the three-pronged knife and the Ewok bolo, you know, the whole thing is... You know, when he went to musketeer school, he's like, look, I'm okay with a sword, but I am a multitasker. So
I don't know if we're breaking down the fight, if that's happened yet.
We're not doing it. Rick talked about this off screen, but no one knows this, but we don't want to continue doing the play-by-play of him meticulously going through it. We want the sword fight breakdown to be us breaking it down and talking about it. So continue.
I really want to this three-pronged sword. I really want Rick's input on this.
Nice.
Because this feels this feels like the Kurgan sword kind of thing where like this thing should not work and it should not be able to cut another sword, a sword in, you know, in twain. What are the mechanics of this? Have you looked into this?
This is a historically accurate sidearm.
Really?
For the time period that we're working with, and it's called a trident dagger. And it functions exactly how it looks. There is some sort of catch in the handle that when you turn it, the two blades on either side are spring-loaded to open. And they open as far as the curved bits of the crossguard are positioned. And then what you do is typically you will catch a sword with the trident dagger. But because these blades are on the thin side, in theory, you could snap a blade if it's been weakened enough at a certain point in the same way that Oliver Platt does here. But the actual Swordbreaker dagger is actually it's a dagger with a lot of like cutouts in the side of it meant to fully wedge a blade. So that way you could get a lot of leverage on it. I wouldn't say that Porthos would be breaking a blade in, is it three pieces? Yeah, three separate pieces like this in reality with this piece or with this particular sidearm. You can see the wires being pulled when you go frame by frame. But that is exactly what this type of dagger is meant to do, to capture and immobilize an opponent's blade.
Will it break a blade?
And like I said, if these are Cardinal Guard blades, they're probably not as well made as.
Oh yeah, it's also cold out there. It's cold out there.
Listen, when it's cold out, your sword is going to behave a little different than when it's.
That's
nice
not a problem for Chris O'Donnell.
No, certainly not.
Now I assume that this was a completely made up. Like, hey, this will be a fun thing, fun visual on screen. I think this was a trailer moment. Him at least. The blades, springing apart like that.
I love it. And then the guy runs away and he does the bolo on him, which is so much fun.
And
which is
Porthos saying, "Oh, I love my job."
Yeah. God, I love my work. Yes. The bolos perhaps proves that Porthos is a little bit as traveled as he says, because those are from Argentina, according to my Argentina.
Well, in the 1600s, it was called Argentina.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to be historically accurate. Yeah.
Thank you.
This is where I found my fact about the 6 weeks of fencing and riding lessons for Kiefer, Chris,
fact?
And Oliver. But Charlie missed out on all of this. And according to that as well, it said that Charlie Sheen actually hates horses. I'm just saying he's not.
We are not big fans of him either.
Yeah.
I think we should note that the two guards that Aramis is fighting, he sidesteps and the two guards stab each other.
Yeah.
Which I think it feels like a classic move.
Yeah.
Great for a guy who doesn't know how to, use the sword as well as everybody else because he missed 6 weeks of training.
Mm. And that's as I was watching this, it was. That's when I started thinking, oh, right, this is a Disney movie. So all of the fights are either going to be, we're going to either incapacitate people or all the deaths will be off screen, like the bar that we come upon and all the guards are either dead or tied up. The only other person I can think of that has been killed in this movie up to this point was when they go to the prison in the opening of the movie.
We saw it in Shadow.
Rochefort, kills a guy off screen. So at this point, when I see the two guards stab each other, I think, okay, very bloodless. For a movie about with so many swords, it's kind of lacking an edge.
It also helps that they're wearing red.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
So I thought, okay, this is a good way to have, you know, your one of your heroes, quote unquote, kill is by having them kill each other. But then after this, then these guys start dying. You know, I was surprised that we see Athos just slash a guy and then stab him. Flash. And then we'll see the guy that the guard, the head of the guards that that D'Artagnan is fighting takes
the
a nice header.
To the head of the guard.
Oh my gosh. What a disrespect on the abilities of the captain of the guard that he's not defeated by D'Artagnan's swordsmanship. He's defeated by a loose rock.
And well, he gets his hat knocked off and then loses his footing. And then
like, seriously,
I love that. This is another classic like sword fight atop a high cliff. And then we cut down to the musketeers just kind of getting their stuff together and then looking up like, what the, he's still alive.
Yeah.
So they expected him to die.
Yeah. Hey, listen, solve your problem right there.
Yeah. But, yeah, go at it, buddy.
D'Artagnan should have been the one fighting two people.
Yes.
So that they, so that when they saw him still alive, it was like, oh wow, Andy's fighting two guys, you know.
It would have been more impressive. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Aramis is doing last rites.
Yep. Yeah.
I like that.
We get background on Aramis.
I like that Aramis has a connection to the Cardinal. It kind of
ropes
him.
I know. One of his soldiers was one of his students.
It bothers me because I'm like, that should have been, that should, I mean, especially top billed Charlie Sheen should have had a moment with the Cardinal where it's just like, unless I'm forgetting something, he should have had a moment where like, oh, I recognize you. You're one of my old students. And
oh, they will. They'll
wait
have a moment
until they storm the castle.
They do? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. My memory is terrible.
Well, remember there's a flashback. It looks a lot like from Tropic Thunder when Kurt Lazarus and is in a Tobey Maguire or hot priest.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You're going to have to wait on that scene.
All right.
So they leave him. They leave D'Artagnan. Yeah, like, they're like they're done.
Listen, but you need to get the hell out of here because we are active outlaws, and just by associating with us, you are their boy going to become an outlaw. So go home, find a woman, start a family.
And this is BS because they know who he is by now because he's introduced himself, and they now know he's D'Artagnan. And we know later in the movie they know D'Artagnan.
Mm-hmm.
They know young D'Artagnan's father,
right?
So who's also named D'Artagnan?
They know the character that should have been played by Kevin Costner in a flashback.
Yeah.
Well, then we should start calling this one D'Artagnan because he's the second D'Artagnan. He's not the first.
Sorry, that would be you're speaking Austrian.
Oh, I'm sorry. Be, I apologize.
It would be D'Artagnan. So Rochefort rides up after the musketeers leave him. And of course, D'Artagnan's like, yeah, I'll take you all. I was thinking right here. I was like, how much of a cool plot twist would it be if they killed D'Artagnan here? And then the titular three musketeers are now like, oh my God, we screwed up. We have to take this. You know, the danger has stepped up even more. These guys are bloodthirsty. They'll kill anybody.
It would have been equally crazy if D'Artagnan somehow murdered all of these people and then became the new bad guy that the three musketeers then had to hunt down, be like, oh no, this kid that we rejected has now become the insane villain. It's very Incredibles that way.
That's true.
That's the thing about musketeers. When everybody is a musketeer, no one will be a musketeer. he tries to go toe-to-toe with Rochefort, and he's immediately unhorsed and sucker-punched by...
But they didn't sword fight, so there's no sword fight breakdown, because he's a better horseman. I blame Stabby. Stabby is definitely my fault. I was not being a good horse that day. I apologize.
So we go to the dungeons, D'Artagnan is being interrogated, and we find out that Rochefort is early General Grievous. Mm.
This would make a lovely addition to my collection.
The fact that this kid has made it through this entire town without that gold sword being stolen from him.
No, right?
And it's another sort of Prince of Thieves sort of connection or kind of borrowing from, it feels like, is like, again, it's my father's sword. This is the sword, you know, that my enemy has stolen. And there's a little bit of that there.
Yeah, the whole bad guy killing the hero's father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Takes it, he does say it. Because Rochefort is telling him he killed his father. He's like, I'm going to take your sword because I keep the swords of the men I kill. He's like, well, I'm not dead yet. I wasn't talking about you, dickhead.
So then, watching this, I had no memory of this scene until I see the sloth like prison guard.
Oh, Tor? Tor from
Plan 9.
Yeah, Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Gosh.
I was thinking Hawk the Slayer when I saw that guy. I was like, is this one of those, what do we call those guys?
The Hunchback?
The prison, the dungeon.
Slaver on the, slavers on the river.
Wait, too. You mean from Beastmaster? You
said Beastmaster. Hawk the Slayer. That's what I'm thinking. Hawk the Slayer.
You're thinking one of the sex guards?
What are the sex guards? What are those called? Oh, thank God he's not.
He's not wearing a mask. He should. He should of be. All the people should be wearing a mask.
Yeah, please put a mask
on. I'm the titular man in the Iron Mask because I'm so gross. They didn't make Retin A at this point.
Yeah. So Rochefort is reading D'Artagnan the charges. He says, you and the musketeers are responsible for the killing of the Cardinal's guards, an offense punishable by death. And D'Artagnan fires back with, you can't kill me for doing that one illegal thing because I was doing this other illegal thing.
And it's
like, buddy, that's not the defense you think it is.
Yeah.
This is why in America you get a lawyer.
Yes.
In 1620s France, you don't have that luxury because you get instant dungeon.
What is the French rights? We know what, there's the Magna Carta, there's it's not the Treaty of Versailles, that's World War I. So
I don't think there is one. I think it's just instant guillotine.
There's no Geneva Convention.
Oh, there's no guillotine yet. They're still using swords and axes in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It is called the Declaration of Rights of Man and of the Citizen. This is what we have.
Rights of Man? I heard Rats of Man. And
it sounds like rat. Okay, this is the Declaration of Rights of Men.
Which is where they got the idea for the Ratatouille movie.
Yes, that's where it comes from. Yes. See,
I feel like we're falling down a rat hole right now.
Mm-hmm. What's the distance between the rat hole and this prison?
In case you're wondering, there is a famous rat hole that is in
Everyone
Chicago.
Everyone knows about the rat hole.
Yeah, at this point.
At this point, I am.
It's like talking about Jesus. Like,
at this point, Jesus. I am so famous, guys. This is like the movies that came out before my big movie hit. This is going to come out like, a month and a half from now, and I'm going to be so famous.
Yeah. Something I really appreciate about all this rat hole business is you haven't used it to sell out and, boost the popularity of the podcast at all. Yes. You are so focused on the hole.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
It's almost weird that he hasn't plugged the podcast when talking about the rat hole.
I almost did. If you're listening to this podcast and have no idea, go look up Chicago Rat Hole. And I have been interviewed like 3 times by 3 different news outlets. It's ridiculous that this even happened. But the point is, during the first one was NBC, I almost said, when they said, what are you doing here? I almost said, well, I'm a podcaster. I almost said it. And then I was like, I'm not going to do that. That's stupid.
Do you like sword movies?
Do you guys see Highlander? Because that shit owns.
That would have been a baller move to be interviewed about one thing and constantly be turning the conversation back to how good Highlander is.
Well, I'm really sad the rat hole's gone. It's kind of like in Highlander when
Ramirez gets killed. Yeah,
that would have been because this story also got picked up by not only the Washington Post but also the New York Times. So it would have been amazing to see my words about Highlander make it in there, but it didn't. Oh well.
Christopher Lambert reading it and just having that Antonio Banderas reaction, just like, oh
Antonio Banderas from Austria?
Yes, of course.
Famous Austrian.
Famous Austrian. I'm from Austria.
So anyway, Rochefort says, we're going to kill you no matter what. But if you tell me where the musketeers are, I'll give you back your father's sword. And D'Artagnan's like, I can't tell you something I don't know. Give me my sword back and I'll kill you. And Rochefort's like,
we're not those kind of friends. They didn't tell me where they were going. They just left me.
They gave me a series of really vague descriptions of where I should be at a very specific time. They're not helpful people.
They gave me a phone number. Look at this. There's not enough numbers here. I don't understand.
555. God damn it. That's like the fake one.
But Rochefort leaves the prison guard in charge, says take him below. And mm-hmm. the prison guard is really casual that he drops his keys on the ground next to D'Artagnan, which immediately sets up for D'Artagnan to do a like a press X to quick takedown type maneuver.
Yeah. And I believe Rochefort is, what, 20 feet away when this happens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's not enough time.
You can't hear him, though, over the wails of the other prisoners. So
yeah, it's true.
Rochefort just thinks
prisoners of it as, have whales.
Rochefort thinks of it as red noise. It's just not even paying attention to it. Helps him sleep.
But I appreciate that the other prisoners in that awful dungeon aren't immediately ratting out D'Artagnan.
It's rat.
Hey, you know what?
Rat.
Oh, right.
Solidarity, brothers.
Yeah. What happens in the rat hole stays in the rat hole.
Yeah. These are true rat holes, holers.
Yeah. But yeah, the important thing that we see at the end of this cut is there are a bunch of shadowy figures that are walking down a hallway, and D'Artagnan's like, ooh, instead of immediately escaping, I should probably check that out for plot reasons.
Mm.
And it's a great ending to this cut. We've learned a lot.
We're a third of the way through the Three Musketeers.
Yep.
One third away. Yes.
Listen, the way I cut up this movie into just like roughly 15-minute segments, it doesn't always work because the movie is only like an hour and 45, so it's closer to like 20-minute segments or whatever. But sometimes the cuts work out. Sometimes you get what we had today where one of your major characters is shuffled off from the first episode to the second, so whatever.
We'll find out what happens to D'Artagnan in 2 weeks.
That's right, because next time, Cardinal Richelieu tasks Milady de Winter with a spot of espionage, but Rochefort discovers that their clandestine meeting was overheard by a sneaking D'Artagnan. Sentenced to hang in the village square, D'Artagnan is saved at the last moment by his musketeer allies, and the four flee in the Cardinal's carriage. As the three musketeers and D'Artagnan rush towards Calais to intercept the Cardinal's agent, the Cardinal calls for mercenaries to stop them. Unaware of the danger that awaits them on the road, the musketeers stop for the night and decide to school D'Artagnan in the manly art of wenching. Daring escapes, day drinking, and damsels await in cut 3 of the Three Musketeers.
I love a good day drink.
I'm so pumped.
I love a good day drink.
I'm really excited for that part of the scene where, they're trying to escape. They're being shot at. And Porthos is like, hey, you want some champagne? No, we're in the middle of a chase. All right, red wine then.
I wonder how much was written, and I wonder how much was riffed in the day. Maybe he didn't come up with it on that take, but maybe it's one of those things where it's like a Larry David type situation where they'll do the scene, and as it progresses, they may go back and the ad lib is added as part of the scene.
Yeah.
So
I don't have enough time. Charlie's got like 4 other movies he's making at the same time.
Guys, I gotta go. You'll notice in half of this movie, he's played by a potato in a wig. It's just.
That future recap was very helpful because at this point, I could not remember where this movie goes and how Rebecca De Mornay fits into it. I remember kind of the climax with her character, but I couldn't remember how we got from here to there.
Oh, from Risky Business?
Yeah.
Countess De Mornay.
Yeah, yeah. And one other, since I've got it looping on and the screen over here, Rick, I think the actress you were thinking of with the wench, the damsel that Aramis is wooing, I think she looks like Leslie Mann.
Also,
watch it again, one. And I think that's what she looks like.
Well, Leslie Mann, and they've all got the same. It's the same people going out for the same roles.
Yeah,
she's just 15 years ahead of any of these people acting.
Yeah, that's. It's the face. It's the way she does the voice. It was very tricky to try and track down that Emma woman.
Well, thank you for coming, Travis. It's been awesome having you on. We love having someone on that, one, is a sword boy. Two, loves these kind of like sword swashbuckling movies. So do you have anything you want to promote?
At some point, check out Minute of Thieves. It's been a real weird year, so I've kind of stalled on producing that show, but it will be out soon-ish. So
awesome.
Look out for that. Yeah.
The road to Sherwood can be long and rocky. That's just how it is.
That's right. And I plan to cover this movie on the road to Sherwood as well. So,
and if you like, and if you like any of us, I don't know about Rick, but I've been on a bunch of Travis's Real Comic podcast.
You've all been on.
At one point or another. Yeah.
Good. That's good to know. Cause listen to those. Those are fun. And those are our other things that are other fetishes, which is comic books and superheroes and nerddom. So
yeah,
pretty awesome. So, well, thanks for being part of it. And as the first time we can do, our new catchphrase. Well, we don't have a new catchphrase. We have two. So we can just say all for one.
And one for all.
Good. It was a question. Blang, blang.
Blang, blang. Blang, blang.